I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My first guest is Dr. Bernie Siegel, who prefers to be called Bernie. He needs no introduction to many all over the world whose lives he has touched over the years. In 1978, he started talking about patient empowerment and the choice to live fully and die in peace. His first book, Love, Medicine, and Miracles, was published in 1978 and redirected his life as a surgeon. In 1978, he also originated Exceptional Cancer Patients, a specific form of individual and group therapy utilizing patient drawings, dreams, images, and feelings. Many books followed, including Peace, Love, and Healing, How to Live Between Office Visits, Prescriptions for Living, Help Me to Heal, 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, Smudge Bunny, 101 Exercises for the Soul, Love Magic and Mud Pies, Buddy's Candles, and just published Faith, Hope, and Healing. Bernie embraces a philosophy of living and dying that stands at the forefront of medical ethics and spiritual issues our society grapples with today. He continues to assist in the breaking of new ground in the field of healing and living the message of kindness and love. His website is www.berniesiegelmd.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Bernie, and I look forward to an interesting discussion. First, you developed a new approach with cancer patients in the 70s called the Exceptional Cancer Patient. Will you tell us about this approach?
Yeah, I mean, first let me say that the name came because so few people responded when I sent out 100 letters saying, let me help you live a longer, better life. You know, come to a group and work on a lot of issues. And I expected 300 to 500 people to show up because it didn't say you couldn't bring friends and relatives with a problem. And less than a dozen women appeared.
Mm-hmm.
So my wife basically labeled them exceptional. And it's not that the potential in each of us is to be exceptional. But what I've found really over the years is that if you don't grow up with self-worth and self-esteem, which comes from parents loving you, then you're afraid of challenges because you could fail, you know, and then the guilt, the shame, the blame, I did everything wrong. Or you grew up being told you're never going to amount to anything and you embarrass us. And so those are the people who are afraid to participate. I mean, literally, I do a lot of work with drawings and asking people questions. And people say, I'm not an artist. Or they bring in a drawing they had their 10-year-old do for them. And they're trying to fight cancer, so to speak. And so again, what I found was that the people who came are, as I say, exceptional. And a question I ask now, just to let people know that, I'm standing in front of a large audience. I'll say, I'm going to ask you a question. Almost everybody in the room is going to say, answer yes. And the question is, did your parents love you? Raise your hand. And all the hands go up. And I said, I just want you to know that's why you're here, willing to participate and listen and not, you know, think about it as what did I do wrong, but what can I do right? And that's why I like the word potential, that you don't die based on statistics. It's what am I capable of? What's possible? And as I say, when you work with survivors, you begin to realize they have a unique personality, and you can teach this to others. Matter of fact, way back in the 40s, I believe it was, psychologist Bruno Klopfer was given 24 cancer patients' personality profile. And 19 out of 24, one he said he couldn't tell, but 19 out of 24, he predicted correctly who would have a fast-growing tumor, who would have a slow-growing tumor. And all he's got is their personality. So, you know, that's why we need to look at the person, because it's our chemistry. If you're hopeless and depressed, and yeah, you change your body chemistry, and you're going to die a lot faster than somebody who has a fighting spirit, has faith, has peace of mind, has love, has hope. There's a different chemistry. And that affects immune functions, stress hormone levels, and a whole host of things. And communicates with the gene. So it isn't that your body makes decisions, but it's stimulated by the chemistry within your body, and you create that.
So you also developed an immune competence personality test.
Yes, that came from psychiatrist, last name is Solomon, and George Solomon. He was working with AIDS patients many years ago when there wasn't much you can do. And he began to see that from some simple questions you could predict who would be a long-term survivor. And he entitled it immune competent personality. I call it survival behavior. In a broad context, it has to do with faith, ability to express feelings, and seek information. The specific questions that Solomon asked were, number one, do you have a sense of meaning in your life and daily activities? You know, if you just look at statistics, Monday morning, there are more heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and illnesses. So when you have a sense of meaning in your life, it also affects your health. Number two was, am I able to express anger appropriately in defense of myself? And this is something I really bring up to people who have to be hospitalized. Because if you're not treated with respect, speak up. Don't be the submissive sufferer, you see, which is what a good patient is. But be what I call a responsible participant and speak up. Because 100,000 people a year die in the hospital due to medical errors. But if you're a character, say, if you express feelings, then the hospital knows you as a person, and they're a hell of a lot less likely to give you the wrong medication and treatment. The next two questions were basically, am I able to ask friends and family for help when I need it? Am I able to ask friends and family for assistance, you know, favors, that type of thing? And what you find is that a lot of people say, oh, I have cancer, I don't want to upset my family, I won't tell anybody. So they withdraw and hurt themselves and their ability to recover because they're getting no support and no help. And many, many tests literally show that if you're surrounded by loved ones, you have fewer complications, less pain than if you're sitting alone and going through all these things. So survival behavior is to ask for help. The most important question he felt was, let's say you ask your family for help, and or you're asked for something. The question is, am I able to say no to somebody who asks for a favor if I can't or don't feel like doing it? And nurses have a lot of trouble with that, by the way, because of their personality. I mean, they'll say yes to things they don't want to do because they're nursing the world. But you have to realize you're saying no to yourself if you keep saying yes to what you don't want to do. And that takes away your strength and energy and, again, can get you nice and depressed doing things you don't want to do. So when somebody asks you, pay attention to your heart, not your head. And if it feels right, fine, do it. Because what I point out to people is if you're doing something that you love, and you get tired, you take a rest, and you feel fine again. But if you're doing something that you don't want to do, you burn out, and a rest doesn't help you. Because you wake up, and you're still stuck with things you don't want to do, and it's a totally different kind of fatigue. It's not just a physical need. It's an emotional need, too. If things are prescribed for me, am I able to say yes or no versus doing what somebody else prescribed? And what this means is if the doctor says you need this or your family says we don't want you to die, you ought to have... No, you're the one who decides. I call life a labor pain so that you make the decisions about what pains you're going to go through to give birth to yourself. And then when you see it as that kind of gift, see, I'm giving birth to myself, then again, you have fewer complications because it's your choice and what you're going to go through. And that could be saying, I want chemotherapy and I hate eating vegetables, or somebody else can say, I'll eat vegetables and leave my troubles to God, I don't want chemotherapy. It's that person's choice, and it's not so much about avoiding death, but about what is right for me, what do I want to do? And I say that to people. If, you know, if you're going to make a choice, and then 5 years from now you find out, oh, I'm dying, I wish I had done what the doctor said, then I'd say go do what the doctor said. But if you say, no, I'm doing what is right for me, it's not an issue of my getting angry at myself in the future, then fine, go ahead if you're comfortable with that. If I find myself feeling depressed, am I able to use the feeling to redirect my activities in life? And the way I simplify it is to say if you're hungry, you get upset. No, I get something to eat, people will tell you. Or I go nourish myself. fine. Then if you don't like how you're feeling, don't sit there saying, I'm depressed. Depression is no good for the immune system. Oh, my God, so that's more depressing. Just say, wait a minute, I'm feeling depressed. What do I need to do to nourish my life so I don't feel this way again?
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't get, as I say, upset with the feeling that you don't like, because it's motivating you to change your life.
Mm-hmm.
Finding enough play in your life. Now, I define that specifically as things that make you lose track of time. Because I literally feel that that is the healthiest state you can ever be in.
Mm-hmm.
And I have found it on a personal level that when I'm doing things that are creative, and it could be operating on somebody or painting a picture.
Mm-hmm.
For somebody else, it might be working in their garden. But a few hours go by and you think it's 20 minutes. Then, number one, I think you've only aged 20 minutes, not 2 or 3 hours. But number two, I found that if I had a pain, and I got involved in these kinds of activities, I no longer was aware of my body at all.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
I think when you're doing this kind of creative work, your body is getting the healthiest chemistry it can have, both in terms of mind and body.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't be sick when you're in that kind of a state. And if you could live that way all the time, I always say to people, you'd never grow old because you'd never have a sense of time.
Is that an altered state of consciousness?
I think it's a trance state.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I think 95% of the time we are in a trance state.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the states we put ourselves in are troublesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, worrying about next week, next year. And what are you doing to yourself? You're visualizing a terrible outcome. So it's why I try to reprogram people.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if they did a drawing and it looked horrible, I'd say, all right, go home. And 4 or 5 times a day, picture the same thing turning out to be a wonderful result.
Mm-hmm.
You ask them to draw a picture a week later, and it's a totally different picture because they've reprogrammed themselves. It's like an athlete training themselves through visualization,
mm-hmm.
how to hit a golf ball, how to swing a bat, whatever it is. They are programming their body to be successful, and we can do that, too, by using those kinds of images.
Mm-hmm.
Last but not least, am I fulfilling a role in my life to the detriment of my own needs?
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is, you know, if your mama, and I don't make these stories up, you know,
right.
You have 9 kids, quote, I can't die till they're all married and out of the house. But when does that woman die? When her 9th kid left home, say. And I meet men who are sitting in the office with wife and children and say, there's no point in living, I can't work anymore. And I say, I think there are several reasons sitting in the room. It's like you hit them in the head with a mallet. Oh,
mm-hmm.
I never thought of that. So don't live a role, live an authentic life. And again, to elaborate, what I mean by that is you grow up and you become what everybody else wants. So you've lost your life.
Mm-hmm.
See? Then somebody says you got 2 months to live. You say, oh, well, I'm going to go do what I wanted to do and what I enjoy and not what everybody else wants. And literally, at the end of 2 months, you're feeling good and you're not dying. What I'd like people to do is not live a role, not give up your life to please mommy and daddy or anybody else, but to say, what feels right for me? What makes me happy? What
mm-hmm.
do I want to do with my life's time? And go and live that. And don't label yourself as mama, wage earner, whatever it is that you think of yourself as. And,
mm-hmm.
and see your divinity. Because I often say to people, how do you introduce yourself to God? And if you say, I'm a doctor. Or to me, God says, come back when you know who you are. But if you see the divinity in you and you say to God, hey, it's you, it's your child,
mm-hmm.
then fine. God says, come on in. And so I'm often saying to people, get your baby pictures out and put them around your house
mm-hmm.
and where you work so that you honor this child.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention the nice effects when somebody comes into your office and says, who's the cute kid? And you can say, it's me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean that literally, that if you hold up an infant, because if I get a chance to speak at high school graduation, I'll make sure we have an infant there, hold it up, and all the kids, you know, cheer and ooh and ah. And then I hold up one of the graduates, and everybody
mm-hmm.
bursts out laughing. And I point out to them, it isn't many years between the infant and you.
Right.
So why are you laughing at yourself and in awe of the infant? And it has all to do with the authorities we meet, the teachers,
mm-hmm.
the parents, the clergy, the doctors, who leave you walking away feeling, I'm not this beautiful kid.
Mm-hmm.
So because all I'm getting is criticism, what's wrong with me, and so forth. See, let me also add, there is healthy criticism.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good sign if you criticize, because if you care and listen to the criticism, you become a better person. So if some patient says to me, I'm very upset with how you took care of me, I'd say, I'm sorry, what is it? And they'll tell me what I did. That, well, here's a simple one. I mm-hmm. walked into the room, and a woman said to me, what's wrong? I said, what do you mean, what's wrong? She said, your forehead's all wrinkled. You look so serious. I said, I'm thinking of ways to help you. And she said, think in the hallway and smile when you come in here. You see? So I'm willing to listen and hear that. But if I said to her, look, you're the only patient who ever acts like that and says anything,
mm-hmm.
then they're going to give up criticizing because they know he makes excuses and he's not going to change. And literally, if you want to know if you have a good doctor, ask your doctor, are you criticized by patients, nurses, and family? Every really good doctor says yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, if you don't like the word criticism, fine. Call it feedback, coaching. But they're helping you to change and become a better
mm-hmm.
human being and better doctor, plumber, or whatever. You're learning from your mistakes
mm-hmm.
rather than blaming everybody else.
I interviewed a naturopathic physician this morning who had been referred by one of her patients who got in touch with me. And she told me that, she said, how did you know her? She said, she's very demanding. So I assume she was saying that she told her ways that she could improve.
Right.
But she said, I listen and we get along great. And she said, and she's referred lots of patients to me.
Yeah. Yeah, because if the doctor is responding, then the patient feels good and knows that they care.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, as I said, I hear so many stories in our support group. You know, doctor, I have questions to ask you. I only have time for one question.
Mm-hmm.
Then I would turn it into, why are you such an idiot? You know, that's my question.
Right.
Because, you see, if the doctor hasn't lived the experience, that's another problem.
Mm.
Somebody used the words native and tourist. So if the sick person is called the native, then when a tourist shows up, they have no idea what you're experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I learned, and I would say to anybody listening to this, to do. Whenever you have a problem, always ask yourself, how would I explain and describe this to other people?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer isn't to say, I have carcinoma of the colon, or I just lost my job. It's emotional words
mm-hmm.
like failure, roadblock, draining, pressure, and some will say gift, wake up call, blessing, new beginning. But what I've learned is when the negative words pop up, I say, hey, how do those words fit your life?
Mm-hmm.
And people look at you like, wow, thank you. You know, what's draining them? What made them feel like a failure? And so it, the difficulty, the disease, the affliction then becomes a therapist. And you start changing your life and helping yourself to heal.
Mm-hmm.
And another point I make is, because so often, you know, the headline, so-and-so loses his battle.
Mm-hmm.
Death is not a lost battle. I mean, mm-hmm. it's an inevitable result.
Right.
And what you find is, if you focus, because I always love to quote Mother Teresa, I will not come to an anti-war rally, but if you have a peace rally, call me. So when you're focusing on killing cancer, fighting a war against cancer, you empower your enemy. And the same thing would, you know, is in, you might say, world politics.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you focus on the enemy versus how can we reach peace? How
mm-hmm.
can we heal? How can we develop a relationship? How can I live? Then it's very different. So when people say, how can I get myself well? How can I heal? They're focusing on themselves and their life, not just how can I kill my enemy?
Mm-hmm.
Because that doesn't improve your life or give you a will to live.
Right. From my interactions with you, Bernie, I know that you have a very good sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if you use that then with your patients.
Oh, absolutely. Well, two studies I might mention. So,
mm-hmm.
again, people understand that feelings are scientific.
Mm-hmm.
Cancer patients who laugh live longer than those who don't.
Mm-hmm.
And what they found, this is the American Psychosomatic Association, that it wasn't that they were reading, you know, comic books or jokes. It was they would just laugh And I would say again to anybody listening, laugh 3 times today.
Mm-hmm.
Every few hours, just stop and laugh for no reason. And watch how you feel when you're done.
Mm-hmm.
My wife used to do stand-up comedy as part of my presentation.
Mm-hmm.
At first, we thought, okay, we'll give people a break. You'll get up, tell a few jokes, you know, like a female Henny Youngman.
Right.
But one day, instead of our changing seats, in other words, she would get up, take over the podium, I'd sit in her seat. I stayed up on the stage because it was awkward to climb down. And I was really impressed as a physician by the change in appearance of the audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 10 or 15 minutes of laughter, and they're all sitting up, smiling, looking 10 years younger.
Right.
And more people would thank her mm-hmm. at the end of the evening than me,
mm-hmm.
because she helped them feel better. So,
right.
Yes, laugh. The mm-hmm. other was a study on loneliness. Again, you see, when you ask people what's happened in your life, I'm not blaming you. Loneliness affects the gene which controls immune function. So if your spouse dies, you move, things happen to you, and you're feeling lonely, you're more likely to develop a serious illness.
Mm-hmm.
And a variety, from cancer to autoimmune diseases, because the immune system just goes nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, the poets, songwriters, therapists all see these things, but often the physicians don't, because we don't get to know people's history. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's just, what's wrong? What's your complaint? And so you're writing a prescription without saying what's going on in your life and why this might have happened to you at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really important. And again, your upbringing allows you to do a lot of this. What I realized is, years ago, I'm a multiple personality,
mm-hmm.
meaning that I will say things and do things that are really kind of nuts, you know, like a kid is talking. Well, just so people understand,
mm-hmm.
I got a contract from a lawyer, you know, to sign, and they put the sticker on it, sign here, sign here, sign here. So I wrote here, 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 all over it, and mailed it back. Well, the lawyer called up, said, you got my office laughing, which is rare, but I need your autograph. See, and it's like, how can you do a thing like that? Well, it's like the kid in me. I was brought up with love.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a multiple personality who isn't afraid of being a kid, acting silly, being a clown. I'm not afraid of relationships, talking to strangers on the street.
Mm-hmm.
You know, see, when I'm walking the dog, somebody says, hey, hello, how are you? What's everybody's answer? Fine. And they walk past you.
Right.
I say, hey, are you really serious? Do you want to know? You got time to listen? and then suddenly they stop, and you really get into a conversation with people.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I'm like.
Mm-hmm.
If you're brought up without love, you become a multiple personality who fears relationships and worries about criticism and worries about what everybody else is thinking. And it really destroys your life because you're afraid to go out into the world. I mean,
yeah.
Yes, you may get a job, but you don't want to get close to anybody
because mm-hmm.
they could hurt you like your parents did. And it's really sad
right.
to have those things happen.
Bernie, last year you presented at the National Cancer Survivors Day.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, all over the country there's a day called National Cancer Survivors Day, and so different groups and organizations will hold events, and they actually publish a book, which with every state there will be various people who speak and what their topics are and things of that sort. So because of my involvement on an emotional level, yeah, I get invited to a lot of places, and usually the first one that calls I say yes, and to the others I say I'm sorry, I can't.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, because again, when you think about it, because I was just speaking recently for Yale New Haven Hospital, and they have a series of lectures, and they were saying that they had so-called scientific lectures about diseases and cancer, and they wanted something related to people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what the National Cancer Survivors Day is about. We're people. It's not just somebody to get up and give a lecture on breast cancer, prostate cancer, you know, but about the people and how do we help the people who will develop cancer
mm-hmm.
and how do we help them to live and become survivors, but also not label themselves because of cancer. You know what I mean? That
mm-hmm.
There's still more to you than the fact that you are a survivor. Don't label yourself based on your disease, because a lot of people get attention. We give sick days, not health days.
Right.
And they get attention through illness. And that's something I'd say, again, that survivors teach each other, that you can reach out and get the attention and not need your illness to get the family to listen to you.
Is this for just survivors, or is it a combination?
Oh, for the families as well, yeah. Because don't forget, everybody, you know, if one person in the family has it, everybody's experiencing it.
Practitioners there also?
That's hard for me to answer in terms of the audience.
Because
what I find is, most of the time, the audience is related to the patient and families and friends. And the doctors, as sad as it may sound, are afraid to sit with their patient. You know, it's like you're not protected by your desk anymore.
Right.
And that was a big part in my life. I began to go to these conferences and sit with my patients and listen to what they really needed, which was, quote, I need to know how to live between office visits, not just what pills do I take, what treatment, but how do I live when I'm not with you and you're not supporting me. So I think a lot of times doctors are fearful of being there.
Right.
Though it's getting better. I mean, there are more conferences being held now for doctors so they understand what patients are experiencing and how to help them, and also to cope with loss, you see. So you go to, a doctor goes to one of these meetings, gets close to a lot of patients, and they die. And then it's, oh, I shouldn't have gotten close. I mean, and I don't make, again, these stories up, because when you say to doctors, how does it feel? They say, I think. I say, no, I asked you how you felt when this happened. Well, I think I'm telling you. And you really have to repeat the question 3 to 5 times before the doctor says, oh, you want to know how I feel? Yes. Because what I find is, if your pet dies, veterinarians call you and write you letters. If your family member dies, you rarely hear from a doctor. And that's a sad part of what I call our medical information. That if we got a true medical education, we would be able to deal with our feelings, know ourselves better, and be able to deal with our patients' feelings.
Bernie, would you like to tell the audience then about your books? I know you had one come out. Didn't you have one come out recently?
Yeah, we just had a recent one called Faith, Hope, and Healing. And the subtitle is Inspiring Lessons Learned from People Living with Cancer. And this is about families, individuals, and their behavior and their survival. And it doesn't mean that somebody may not have died, but it's, again, how did they live? That's the question. And what gift the family is left with. They always say the only thing of permanence is love. So if you want to be immortal, bring love into your life. It's a wonderful weapon. When people drive you crazy, tell them, I love you. They don't know what to do with you. But the love is, again, you know, what it does for your physiology and how it helps you to survive.
And do you have other products? I know you have a lot of books.
Well, I have, I mean, if people want to go to the website, Bernie Siegel, SIEGELMD.com. All my books, a lot of audios, too, for the guided imagery. And it isn't just about disease. It's helping people get through the day. And there are many of articles I've written, like Waging a War Against Cancer, What Does Every Woman Want, and a whole host of things that people can read and look at. See, the key, if you put a performer on a stage and give them a comedy, then you take the same people, put them in a tragedy, and draw their blood while they're acting. While they're in the comedy, immune function increases and cortisol levels, the stress hormone levels, go down. Opposite happens in a tragedy. What impresses me with that is it's not even your life and you're changing your body chemistry. And what people need to do is act and behave as if the person they want to be. So it could be, okay, I want to be a survivor. Fine, here's Bernie's list. Pick a role model and then rehearse and practice. And don't get mad at yourself. You know, if you have a bad day, it's wait a minute. Don't give up. Tomorrow, get up, start again. So to think of yourself as an actor, as an athlete, and the coach is telling them, what are you doing wrong? How you can improve, and so you get better and better at it. And again, you know, much as what I was saying about the criticism, that look for coaches. If you have the inspiration and the desire and intention with the coach, you'll accomplish something special. That's what I have found. That often what people see in others is what's within them. So when somebody comes up to me and says, oh, you inspire me in your book and your lecture, I say, I can't put inspiration in you. It was in you. I brought it out. But I know that person is going to achieve something. That somebody who comes up and says, oh, I've heard you before. You keep repeating the same thing. It's just, oh, you know. One person I was told recently said, oh, his books, I threw them in the fireplace. Why? Well, he's blaming me, you know, for being sick. No, I'm not.
Right.
But that's the interpretation, say, of the same book that mm-hmm. somebody else has inspired me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's what's within the person.
Right.
And I try to bring out the good things
mm-hmm.
and help the others, in a sense, by reparenting them,
mm-hmm.
letting them know I do love you. And I may not like what you're doing or your behavior, but I love you.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, I find a lot of people begin to realize they're worth something and then start taking care of themselves because I didn't quit on them and reject them like
right.
everybody else did.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd have to add, even the violence we're reading about in the newspapers today, especially from kids, shooting others, killing themselves, that's coming from rejection
mm-hmm.
and abuse.
Yeah.
And then they seek revenge, and then the guilt comes, and they kill themselves too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate this very much, Bernie. It's always very interesting to talk with you.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank you.
My second guest is Dr. Lise Alschuler, a naturopathic physician with board certification in naturopathic oncology, specializing in prevention and naturopathic care for people with cancer. She has authored many articles in professional and popular press publications, and in 2007 co-authored The Definitive Guide to Cancer, An Integrative Approach to Prevention, Treatment, and Healing. She is currently the president of the American Association of Naturopathic Physicians. She was selected as one of Seattle, Washington's top physicians in 2007 by Seattle Magazine. She was also founding board member of the Oncological Association of Naturopathic Physicians and former associate professor at Baxter University. She is currently in private practice in Arizona. More information is available at www.drlise.com.
I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Lise. And I look forward to an interesting discussion on cancer.
Thank you. I'm glad to be with you again.
Thank you. I'm glad to have you back too, Lise. What do you consider to be good complementary treatment for individuals receiving chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery?
Well, you know, probably the most important part of complementary therapy is what I would call lifestyle. And by that I mean dietary activity and stress modification behaviors
mm-hmm.
and habits, because we know that both chemotherapy and radiation are very hard on the body. They're depleting. It's not uncommon for people to develop anemia. Fatigue is the most common and prevalent side effect. And so many of those, what we call constitutional symptoms of conventional therapies, are quite preventable or at least can be reduced in severity with dietary and other lifestyle recommendations. So,
mm-hmm.
for example, in the diet category, it's really important that people consume enough nutrients, enough calories, but good calories. So
mm-hmm.
people oftentimes will, especially between chemotherapy sessions, maybe forget that they really should be eating well and let themselves eat lots of hamburgers and milkshakes
mm-hmm.
and so forth. And, you know, certainly if they don't have an appetite and that's all they can stomach, that's fine. But generally speaking, if people can really focus on high-quality protein sources, eggs, seeds, nuts, lean meats, lots of fruits and vegetables so they get the vitamins, minerals, and flavonoids that they contain, their tissues will be healthier
mm-hmm.
and they're less likely to experience fatigue, less likely to have anemia or at least severe anemia. And that can really make a huge difference in how they respond to the treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's lots more I could talk about, but just at a glance, that would be sort of maybe a first step in
mm-hmm.
the diet direction.
Mm-hmm.
And then along with that, there's more and more research now which is confirming the benefit of exercise, both for people getting chemotherapy and radiation. And it's interesting because engaging in regular exercise, meaning 30 minutes of moderate exercise a day, 6 days a week, will in most cases not only improve people's tolerance of chemotherapy and radiation, but will actually improve the response to those treatments and will extend their survival time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very important thing for people to consider. And then on kind of the flip side of that, and the sort of third leg of this lifestyle stool, is stress modification and really prioritizing stress management, relaxation,
mm-hmm.
meditation, prayer, whatever it is that people do on a daily basis that gives them a sense of peace, contentment,
mm-hmm.
relaxation.
Mm-hmm. Then are there some general complementary care that you would recommend for all cancer patients? And I say general because I know in your book you have different things for different cancer sites, but I'm wondering if there's some general overall things that you might prescribe for all cancer patients.
Mm-hmm. In my book, The Definitive Guide to Cancer, my co-author and I, Carolyn Gazella, and I really spent quite a bit of time looking over the research and
mm-hmm.
tried to make these recommendations specific to each cancer type.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right that there are things that have indication for each cancer, but there are some general things. If you're talking about this from a sort of a supplement
mm-hmm.
perspective,
mm-hmm.
one compound which is really indicated in every cancer type as far as the research indicates is melatonin. Melatonin is a hormone that our bodies produce in small quantities, and it's produced by the pineal gland in response to dark. So
mm-hmm.
we produce it at night. And in the quantities that our body produces, melatonin not only helps us to sleep, but it also has immune-stimulating properties, and it helps to slow down the rate of our cell divisions, which allows a mutated or a cancerous cell pause moment, which in turn allows the immune system a chance to recognize it and destroy it. If we take supplemental melatonin, we are supplying melatonin at much higher quantities than our bodies secrete, and at that high dose, the melatonin has much more dramatic immune-stimulating properties, which create a direct anti-tumor effect.
Mm-hmm.
And melatonin has actually been the subject of several clinical trials, and in all the clinical trials that it's been that have studied melatonin, the results have indicated that melatonin enhances the tumor-killing effect of chemotherapy agents and radiation,
oh.
at the same time improving people's tolerance to those treatments.
Mm-hmm.
So I think melatonin would be one example of something
mm-hmm.
that I would certainly have to really think hard about not recommending.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
I guess another kind of category or another supplement that is indicated in most cancer types is green tea extract. Green tea extract is a little bit less uniformly recommended because there are some cancers that do not respond to green tea, and there are some chemotherapy agents that may be interfered with by green tea,
mm-hmm.
so it needs a little bit more discretion. But by and large, green tea does seem to have benefit in most cancer types and is quite synergistic with several chemotherapy agents,
mm-hmm.
helping to concentrate the chemotherapy in the tumor tissues and at the same time protecting healthy tissues.
Mm-hmm.
For example, a chemotherapy agent called adriamycin is often used for women with breast cancer, and it's also used in several other cancers, and green tea is a really good companion to adriamycin because it helps that chemotherapy selectively concentrate in tumor cells while at the same time helping to protect the heart and the liver,
mm-hmm.
two organs which are prone to toxicity from adriamycin.
Mm-hmm. Now, is curcumin, do you use that?
Yeah, curcumin is an herb, a spice, that when it's concentrated is quite helpful in cancer treatment. Interestingly, the vast majority of research on curcumin has been in animals and what we call preclinical, and there's very little that we know about it in humans,
mm-hmm.
as far as what's been studied. And so it's a little early to say for sure about how
mm-hmm.
effective it is as a complementary therapy. I think curcumin has a much more significant role as a preventive agent.
Oh,
and
uh-huh.
So I'd probably put it more in that category. It has a little bit more potential to interfere with some chemotherapy agents.
Mm-hmm.
So people have to be a little bit careful about combining it.
Oh.
On the other hand, it can be quite helpful with people getting radiation treatment. It can kind of help sustain their well-being and may even act synergistically with the radiation.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. Then let's talk about prevention. What can people do to prevent cancer as much as you can?
Well, you know, interestingly, prevention is a controversial concept. There are some people that believe that, some scientists that believe that cancer is essentially not preventable and that people can't do anything to
mm-hmm.
prevent it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not one of those, and I actually believe that the research that does indicate that there are quite a few things that people can do to help prevent the risk of cancer. And one area is diet, for sure. It's estimated that diet probably contributes about 30 to 35% of cancers.
Oh.
So about a third of all cancers mm-hmm. may, in fact, be due to diet. So what we're talking about is really the lack of sufficient fruits, vegetables, fiber. That's
mm-hmm.
that's kind of what most of these studies boil down to.
Mm-hmm.
People who don't consume, and we're talking about a lot, so people who over their lifetime have not consumed 6 to 10 servings of vegetables, fruit a day,
mm-hmm.
whole grains, and instead consume refined, packaged, processed foods are at a much higher risk for developing cancers of many types. So that would be something that I would say is
mm-hmm.
first and foremost. There's also some interesting research that indicates that lack of sleep, chronic sleep deprivation, increases the risk of various cancers, including cancer of the prostate, cancer of the breast, and others. So making sure that people are getting usually 7 to 9 hours of sleep every night is another very clear way to help lower the risk of developing
mm-hmm.
cancer. There are some other things that I would put in the category of environmental. You know, obviously we can't control our environment 100%, but we certainly can minimize in certain ways our exposure to environmental cancer-causing toxins.
Mm-hmm.
And as an example, people could choose not to drink beverages out of plastic, plastics which can leach into the beverage and are cancer-causing in some cases. People can choose to use natural-based biodegradable cleaners in their home, thus reducing some of the airborne cancer-causing chemicals that can be released by those cleaners.
Mm-hmm.
So things that we can do in our own environment are certainly advantageous, and the link between those agents and cancer is a little weaker than, say, the diet and cancer, but the data is certainly indicating fairly consistently that there is a link, and it certainly makes sense
mm-hmm.
to try to minimize environmental exposures. On another level, I would say that there are some supplements that I think do have some cancer preventive benefits. And, you know, when you're thinking about supplements, it's just important to recognize that supplements are called that for a reason. They're supplemental to
mm-hmm.
our diet and our lifestyle, so they should never take the place of a healthy diet and lifestyle. But assuming somebody is really working on their diet and trying to get enough sleep and exercising and so forth, taking some additional supplements, I think, has benefits. Specifically, things that we know help the body's cell repair mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our bodies are developing cancerous cells probably all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason we all don't have cancer tumors is because our immune system has recognized those cancerous cells and destroyed them, or because the cells have repaired themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain supplements which stimulate both of those things, the immune system surveillance and destruction of cancer cells and
mm-hmm.
the repair mechanisms. So things like curcumin or turmeric extract is a good cancer preventive agent. Green tea is very, very important as a cancer prevention agent. There's a lot of large epidemiological studies that correlate higher green tea consumption with lower rates of almost all cancer types.
Mm-hmm.
So turmeric, green tea. Essential fatty acids found in nuts, seeds, seed life, both algae and fish, are cancer preventive of many cancer types. And those would probably be on
mm-hmm.
the top of my list, the
mm-hmm.
curcumin, the green tea, and the essential fatty acids. And then there are some other supplements which are more preventive for certain cancer types. So if somebody has a known risk or family history or increased
mm-hmm.
risk for a certain type of cancer, it might indicate other supplements.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you brought up the diet and lots of fruit and vegetables, because I reviewed recently the Casey acid alkaline balanced diet, and it was 80% fruit and vegetables and 20% meat, but only the lean mainly chicken, eggs, fish, and the 20% included dairy and grains.
Yeah. You know, that kind of diet, I think, would probably be ideal for many people.
Mm-hmm.
I think the problem that I see with, you know, kind of living in the world that we live in,
mm-hmm, right.
is that most people are balancing a busy job, busy home life, lots of other things going
mm-hmm.
on, and it's very difficult for people to sustain that kind of diet
mm-hmm.
without a lot of attention and energy paid to it. So in my practice, you know, if people have the capacity to adhere to a diet like that, then I would certainly be
mm-hmm.
supportive. However, I think that there's also, sometimes that can be a little intimidating for some people
right.
because if they can't do it, then they sort of
mm-hmm.
give up. And I think that there's benefit also in at least, you know, the goal for me with people is to make sure that they're at least getting appropriate and sufficient quantities of fruits and vegetables and fiber
mm-hmm.
in the diet. So if they're
right.
at least getting that 8 to 10 servings, or, you know, in some cases maybe it's 8 servings, and they're getting a whole grain, a serving of whole grains, maybe, you know, 25 grams of fiber in their diet every day, if they're doing that and that's all they can do,
mm-hmm.
they're doing a lot for themselves.
Right, right. The other person that's picked up on this, I think, was Andrew Weil, and he calls it the anti-inflammatory diet. But it is very similar to the acid alkaline diet that Casey talked about and you just talked about. So it seems like that there is really something because it's being picked up so often.
Yeah, there's definitely, I think that it is a very important diet and it's something that makes a lot of sense. And that you bring up inflammation, which is a good point, because one of the underlying hypotheses or underlying explanations for diseases
mm-hmm.
like cancer is inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
And our diet has a lot to do with whether our tissues are in a state of chronic inflammation or are prone to being inflamed or are not.
Mm-hmm.
And when our tissues are inflamed, and by that I mean that there's certain chemicals that our body and tissues are secreting, those same chemicals serve as growth factors to
mm-hmm.
malignant cells.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically when we're inflamed, and then we're creating a fertile ground for cancer to grow. And the kind of lifestyle that creates an inflamed body is a lifestyle that consists of a diet that's high in processed,
mm-hmm.
nutrient-depleted foods,
mm-hmm.
high stress, lack of sleep,
mm-hmm.
excessive alcohol consumption, certainly tobacco use, all those things, especially over time,
mm-hmm.
will really destroy the body's ability to maintain a homeostasis and will tend to create an inflammatory state.
Yeah.
And what shows up is inflammatory diseases like musculoskeletal pain and discomfort, arthritis, fatigue, and cancer.
Oh. Hmm. That's interesting. Then, Lise, because breast cancer is so prevalent, and because I'd like to follow a particular type of cancer, I wonder if you could tell us what you would do with a woman that came in with breast cancer.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's assume, for illustration, that this woman has early-stage breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say she's a postmenopausal woman with recently diagnosed breast cancer. Choice on a woman's plate is whether or not or what type of conventional treatment she
mm-hmm.
might receive.
Mm-hmm.
And patients in my practice run the continuum of patients that are opting to engage fully in conventional treatment
mm-hmm.
to patients that, for whatever reason, are opting out of conventional treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And whichever situation a woman's in, I'll, you know, do my best to support her.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of patients, I think, especially in early-stage breast cancer, choose conventional treatment because with conventional treatment, early stage breast cancer is considered a curable illness.
Mm-hmm.
The cure rate now with early diagnosis is above 90%. So let's assume that this woman is undergoing conventional treatment, which will likely consist of surgery followed by some form of chemotherapy potentially depending on the tumor size and or radiation and then some form of hormonal therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So my naturopathic approach is to support that woman at each phase of her conventional treatment. And I often talk about this in that during the state, the time period of active treatment, my job is to support her in receiving those treatments. So mm-hmm. let's say this woman is getting a standard course of Adriamycin cytoxin chemotherapy. I might then recommend a series of supplements that would prevent or reduce some of the expected side effects of that treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So she might receive some carnitine and some CoQ10 and some green tea extract and some melatonin. I'll be talking to her about her diet and her exercise. Then when she's through with that, if she goes on hormonal therapy, my supplements and lifestyle recommendations will change in anticipation of a different side effect profile from the hormonal therapy. So
mm-hmm.
we might now need to address hot flashes or joint disturbances or, you know, certain
mm-hmm.
things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point where I also start to really change my emphasis is now I'm really going to start to emphasize natural therapies that will help to reduce her risk of recurrence.
Mm-hmm.
So really using the natural therapies almost as the mainstay of treatment at that point, and to utilize things like green tea. Comes
mm-hmm.
up again because we know that green tea will reduce her risk of recurrence anywhere from 7 to 27%.
Mm-hmm.
And curcumin comes up again. So things like that will
mm-hmm.
kind of become more important.
Mm-hmm. And that's very interesting, too. Lise, then, would you tell us again about your book and any other services and products you have and how the listeners can reach you?
Certainly. The book that you're referring to is called The Definitive Guide to Cancer, An Integrative Approach to Prevention, Treatment, and Healing is the subtitle. Published by Celestial Arts, available at bookstores nationwide and also on Amazon.com. And my website is www.drlise, that's drlise.net. And I currently practice at Naturopathic Specialists, which is a clinic in Scottsdale, Arizona. And I practice with a colleague, Dr. Rubin. And Dr. Rubin and I focus pretty much exclusively on people that have been diagnosed with cancer. And we offer our naturopathic treatments, whether people are undergoing conventional treatment, whether they've finished their conventional treatment, or they're just interested in prevention.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, certainly welcome people to contact me. I guess I would just add one other thing to our earlier discussion, which
mm-hmm.
is that one of the exciting things about natural therapies is that they're becoming more specific and targeted. So
mm-hmm.
this is not a static field. I'm learning new therapies, and I'm learning new reasons why I use the therapies I do every month. And so that I think it's something that is hopeful. There's
mm-hmm.
a lot on the horizon in the natural arena.
So you'll be keeping notes on all of this for your next book, right?
Right. Actually, yeah, my co-author and I are already going to be writing our a new edition to our book, which will be out next year. So we're doing
great.
That in part because there's new information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I enjoyed your book very much, what I've read of it. And I know it took a lot of research to do a book like that because it's so comprehensive.
Well, thank you.
And I thank you very much for joining me, Lise. I know how busy you are, but I appreciate it, and I know the listeners are going to appreciate hearing what you had to offer.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be on your show, and I'm glad that you're doing what you're doing to help people learn how to be more empowered about incorporating natural therapies.
Great. Thank you, Lise.
I hope you enjoyed this show, the fourth in the cancer series, that will continue for another 3 months with more cancer survivors and experts. These shows will introduce both traditional and alternative therapies and holistic approaches when possible. My goal is to provide some of the information that you will need if you are faced with the diagnosis of cancer, so you can make a rational decision. I also want to point out my website, www.holistichealthshow.com, where all shows are available for streaming after each show or emailed to you for free if requested. You will also find information on future shows during the week before each show and products for sale, including my latest book, Healthy Holistic Aging, published in 2007, that forms the foundation for this show, and also you will find selected ebooks. I will be adding ebooks and CDs to this site as they are finished, so check back often. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host of the Holistic Health Show, wishing you a good evening.